from the San Francisco Jazz Collective album, and this individual has something to say about that. He will be right with you as a guest of the Live with the Jazz Cat show, host Leroy Downs, in just a moment. I do want to mention to you again, if you didn't have time to jot it down, that all the information I gave to you previous to coming on with the show or during the show, you can get from our website, which is www.forlocalsonly.com, and all that information is there. Also, the Live with the Jazz Cat show, if you want to go to Leroy's website, you can get all the archived recordings of the and the interviews held exclusively here on Caramel Jazz and Blues Radio. And if you haven't heard them, they include some very, very really insightful interviews, some of them right from the site of, like, the IAJE, which is the International Association of Jazz Educators, Ornette Coleman's apartment, even in New York. It also happened that Leroy was at the Grammys with Dee Dee Bridgewater, and also the Diane Reeves and her home in Colorado. So just some great interviews all there at the Live with the Jazz Cats site, which is www.thejazzcat.net. So without further ado, let me bring on the Jazz Cat himself, Leroy Downs, for his Live with the Jazz Cat show. Hi, Leroy.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah, time to come on. So we're all set?
Oh, hey, man, I'm ready to rock and roll.
All right, let me let you go here. It's all yours.
Well, you know, we always like to bring on the best in jazz, and my goodness, there's so many talented players. This young man plays great trombone. His name is Andre Hayward. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Leroy, how you doing, man?
I'm very well. How are you?
Thanks for those kind words.
Getting a little cold in New York, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, winter's definitely coming.
Yeah, it's hitting the same way here in Los Angeles, too. You know, you and I are right around the same age, I would imagine, and we both love this beautiful jazz music. With all of that said, and with all of our contemporaries playing jazz, yet also recording and performing in many other different genres, I'll ask you this. What is it to be a jazz musician? How proudly do you think the term is viewed by the older versus the younger jazz musician?
Wow, that's something I never really thought about.
Reason being is because, you know, there's so many people that we love that play in jazz, but they also play in so many different genres. A lot of the guys are playing hip-hop, a lot of the guys, some guys don't, I've heard on a couple of occasions, they don't even want to be referred to as jazz musicians, they just want to be referred to as musicians. So I'm trying to get the sense of what's happening versus the new generation and the older generation jazz player.
Well, you know, I just think it's a logical evolution for the younger generation to gravitate towards more of the contemporary styles, hip-hop and R&B. I mean, if you think about, you know, our jazz legends, they were actually playing some of the popular music of their day. And I sort of adopt that philosophy. I try to, although my primary love is jazz music, you know, I enjoy playing it, I enjoy listening to the masters, but I try to stay versatile, and I do play in a wide variety of settings. You know, I still do a lot of R&B gigs, but I play in a lot of smooth jazz settings. So I try to keep myself open to a lot of different styles. And actually, I teach here in Boston at New England Conservatory, and that's one of the things that I stress to my students is versatility. Yeah, I try to get them to understand that although your primary study is, I mean, we all know that jazz is the highest art form ever that one could ever encounter. But unfortunately, with the work situations being so scarce, I try to encourage the students to get out and play in other settings. I even recommend them to certain gigs that I can't take.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, it is true that in today's day and age, yesterday we used to be the superstars on stage, and now today's jazz player has to be versatile. But I would imagine that it's still fine that we are as versatile as we are, because really you're still known as a jazz musician even though you do play in some other genre.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, you just mentioned your students. I know you you teach, as you said, and you also run a lot of clinics. What other knowledge about jazz music do you find that your students are seeking, and what piece of gold do you give them that can change or sustain the future of this music?
The main thing I try to give them is I try to give them a foundation. I find that a lot of young players are so eager to, they want it right away. It's that whole instant gratification thing. And what I try to stress to them is to really go back and get some of those earlier records. You know, J.J. Johnson, I mean, he's a great start, but let's get even deeper. Let's check out Benny Green, Vic Dickinson, Jack Teagarden. The whole idea is to you want to develop your vocabulary, and it should be well rounded. And I try to get the students to understand that. A lot of kids that they grab some students grab hold to it really fast, and some students I have to really work with and try to get them to really understand that this is the way to go. You go back if you want to really shape and mold your voice for today. You have to go back and listen to the early masters.
Well, you're listening to Andre Hayward on the show Live with the Jazz Cat with Leroy Downs on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. Now, the sound of this trombone is so distinct, yet it always seems to get a backseat to the popularity of the trumpet and the sax, you know?
Oh, yeah.
what drew you to the instrument, and in ways, how do you go about weaving your melodies in the mix to give the subtleness of the sound a major voice on stage?
Well, you know, actually in the beginning, this whole musical adventure started in junior high school. And actually, I didn't choose the trombone at first. I really wanted to play saxophone. And unfortunately, there were no more saxophones left. So the only two instruments left were the trumpet and the trombone. And I didn't even know what a trombone looked like. My band director asked me to choose either of the two, and I chose the trombone. But actually, I picked it up really fast. And as soon as I took it home the first day, I was able to at least get a B-flat scale in.
Right.
And I actually play a couple of melodies by ear. But my approach to music is really gospel-related. My father played in the church for many years. His brothers and sisters actually had a group called the Hayward Singers. And, I remember as a kid, they would rehearse every Saturday at my uncle's church. My uncle's local pastor in Houston. And so I grew up in hearing that music. And actually, a lot of my training was out of the church. My grandmother, she used to, you know, when I really started, I would say maybe around 7th and 8th grade, when I started to develop a little bit more on the horn, she would take me around to different churches and have me play hymns and in front of people. So that was kind of my first introduction to performance.
On the spot.
On the spot.
No, that's great. You know, when I was small, I remember I walked up to some instruments. I think it was in elementary school, and someone said, hey, don't touch that. And I am not using that as an excuse for the reason I don't play, but that's big. I'm still bothered by that a billion years later, you know. So it's wonderful that you had that type of exposure at such a young age.
Yeah, well, actually, not only on my dad's side, but my mom's side as well. My uncle was a great guitar player, and he was actually responsible for really exposing me to the music. And he loved Wes Montgomery. That was his band.
Oh, wow.
And ever so often, he would pick up the guitar and play for me, and you know, he would be talking all this hip talk. I'm talking seven chords and suspended chords, and that stuff really fascinated me at a young age. Mm. Actually, I had another uncle who actually gave me his whole record collection, and he had some hip records, some Coltrane, some Monk. I remember some Lou Donaldson. It was just a whole variety. Charles Lloyd, people like that. He was turning me on to the music early on.
Well, it's beautiful to have such a wonderful family in your life. And now we're going to talk about another family. The SF Jazz Organization is certainly a family.
Oh, yeah.
But you got some Texas blood in that family.
Oh, yeah. That's my cousin, Eric Harlan.
He's a bad boy.
He's a great musician.
Well, I'm so happy.
I love him very much.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see both of you guys playing together. And you know, so tell me what it's like playing with the organization, especially with family in the band.
Wow. You know, it's amazing making the transition from the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra to this band. And it was actually an easy transition. I joined the band a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I've known some of the guys. We even played together, Miguel Zanon, and myself have played a lot together here in Boston when he was going to Berkeley. And, of course, me and Eric have, you know, worked together in different situations, especially with Betty Carter. It's really nice to be a part of an organization where I can make instant friends and build an instant rapport with these guys. It only took the first year for that to happen.
Right.
And it's always nice when everybody gets along and there's no real vibes. Well, you know, of course, in that band, there's no band leader. So, you know, everybody has kind of equal artistic input and equal say of how, you know, how music, how the, everybody's tunes and arrangements are going to be interpreted. So that makes for a nice situation as well. But I think the main thing when you're playing in a large ensemble like that is for people to really develop a personal rapport with each other. And I just think the music follows.
Certainly does. Andre Heyward right here on Live with the Jazz Cat. My name is Leroy Downs. You're listening to it on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. You know, people don't realize that the experience of music and art is so finite. I mean, the music not only can change on stage every night, but, you know, life happens, and the sound that you expect to always be there may not be there tomorrow for a multitude of reasons. I mean, this season, the great Bobby Hutcherson and Joshua Redman have decided to take a break from the collective and have been replaced by Stefan Harris and Joe Lovano, who stepped up as the artistic director. That means different minds, different music, and perhaps different directions. How's the music morphed with the addition of these two new wonderful players?
Well, actually, Stefan and Joe came in, and they were a perfect fit. We just had a tour this summer, a tour of Europe for a couple of weeks. We went to Spain and Germany and Italy. And Stefan and I worked together in several situations. Actually, that was with Joe Lovano, we was our first time playing together. But again, it was just one of those situations where everything gelled. Stefan and Joe came in and did the job, and we're looking forward to a great year next year.
Have they already contributed a couple of pieces of their own for the collective?
We're actually going to start rehearsals in January, so I know for sure that Stefan and Joe are both bringing in some original tunes.
You know, I don't know of another organization that has put together a cast of today's greatest musicians and gives them so much support for creating new music, marketing that music to the world, and celebrating the right masters of the music.
Right.
What has the experience done for you, and how will it benefit your future endeavors after the collective?
Well, you know, it's always an after effect with me. Actually, this was the case with Jazz and Lincoln Center, because, you know, we do a lot of, we pay respect to a lot of the great composers. I find myself really wanting to dig into the composer's music more. It's usually after the first exposure. Like this past year, we were doing all Monk's music. And unfortunately, sad to say, I didn't really listen to a whole lot of Monk. Now I'm digging in and checking out his records now. Really a learning experience, being able to go back and explore someone else's music. The great thing about it is everybody writes for the band, too, so it's always a great thing to hear other cats' music and be able to interpret their tunes as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, in jazz, you know, as you mentioned there's so many different camps of music to speak of, like the SF Collective, or, as you mentioned, the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, or perhaps the Mingus Dynasty Big Band.
Yeah.
Which you've had the opportunity to experience all of those as a player. Are there similar philosophies with structure, freedom, and direction and vision with these bands?
I would say so. In the case of the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, now it's named the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra now, but I think the motto of that band is we're not trying to recreate or imitate the masters. We're simply just trying to pay homage and interpret that music in our own way. Because that music is just as fresh as it was performed and recorded 20 or 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so it's up to every individual to find their own way whether you're playing someone else's music or playing your own music, the ultimate thing is to find your voice.
Right.
And I think that's what preserving this great art form is about. It's definitely finding your own voice. What I try to tell the younger musicians, it's not about imitating someone. Everybody has something creative. Everybody has something to say. And I just think being a part of the SF Jazz Collective, as well as Jazz and Lincoln Center, has given me that kind of artistic freedom to really explore my own creativity. And especially with the collective, now that I'm composing for the band, it's actually given me a little bit more confidence. I'm feeling more confident about my writing, and it's just been a great situation overall.
Well, you know, you compose one that people love called Dre's Blues. I guess everyone keeps asking for that one, huh?
Yeah, for some reason I get a lot of compliments on that tune.
You know, you've always been such a vital part of everyone's music. Are you thinking about putting your own project together? And if so, what will the vibe be? And what cats do you think could make your vision happen? That you aren't already playing with now, you know?
Wow. Well, I just did a record with Wycliffe Gordon for Crisscross, which was actually my introduction to the label. And I think the next recording is, will definitely be my own. I haven't really decided on the musicians that I wanted to use just yet, but the kind of guys that I enjoy playing with, I enjoy playing with musicians who really, first of all, the dance element definitely has to be there.
Right.
The blues, I'm looking for, for soulfulness, that's the main thing. And with those two elements in place, I mean, we can about explore anything, any rhythmic possibility, harmonic, melodic, but those basic elements are mainly what I look for. A lot of my musical taste has been shaped simply from growing up listening to gospel music and a variety of R&B, certain music in the jazz idiom that I listen to. I guess I'm kind of old-fashioned. I'm still listening to those old Blue Notes and Lee Morgan, the Hank Mobley. I enjoy hearing melodies that are singable.
Andre, that is not old-fashioned, man. That will be in style until eternity, man.
That's right. That's right.
You're listening to Andre Heyward right here on the show called Live with the Jazz Cat. I'm Leroy Downs, and you're listening to it on 1410 AM, KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. Well, yeah, Jerry Teakins has a great way of getting together all these great cats and putting them on the Crisscross label. And there's just, if you look back, I mean, so many players have gone through that label and have performed on it at one time or another. And there's some great, great recordings.
Yeah. Well, actually, I credit Stephon Harris for that. We ran into Jerry at the North Sea Jazz Festival this summer. And Stephon introduced me to him, and a couple of months later, I got a call from him to come and do a record.
Yeah, I have never met Jerry Teakins. He's the producer for Crisscross Jazz, for those of you who don't know, which is a fine label and puts so many great musicians on it. I've never met him, but he always seems to know what's happening in the business. He has his finger on the pulse, and he goes out. He calls the guys. He calls the guys to set the sessions up, and it turns out to be such beautiful music.
Oh, yeah. I consider him a modern-day Prestige or Riverside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think in the future he'll be looked upon as that as well.
And apparently he loves trombone. I know there's a few trombone duo records, Conrad Herwig and Steve Davis together. And, Wycliffe, has done a bunch of recordings for him, Wycliffe and John Allred.
Right.
Yeah, so he's very hip.
He's down with the bone.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one time you and I were talking backstage about technology and how it's become so much a part of who we are, what we can do musically, as well as such a wonderful vehicle for promoting our wares. I mean, what are you currently working on that is going to help you take your music and the business to the next level?
I'm glad you asked me that question. Actually, I am very much into direct marketing, internet marketing, actually this has kind of turned into a side career for myself.
Oh.
I'm still in study mode. I'm learning about web design, HTML, learning about blogs and things like that. ultimately, I would like to be able to help other musicians with some of the ideas I'm learning right now. Mm. I just think that, I think the web is a perfect level playing field for us musicians to really get our music out today. You know, even with some of the social networking sites like MySpace and Friendster, and I may be saying that wrong, but you know, there's a few social networks out. You know, I'm seeing a lot of musicians are doing fairly well on MySpace.
Yeah,
you know, they're
promoting
their concerts or promoting CDs. So I think that there's a bright future in terms of the internet for us jazz musicians.
Yeah, well, it's always a bright future, especially if you're a jazz musician. Andre, it's been a pleasure talking to you today, man.
Thank you, Leroy.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, and just appreciate you. And the collective is wonderful. And do you know the schedule of the collective so that you can tell the folks in case you're in their town soon?
Actually, I don't have it handy right now, but we're scheduled to be on the road in mid-February. It's going to be around the 23rd of February.
Well, if that's the case, I know for a fact you'll be in Chicago in March of 2008.
Definitely.
Yeah. Great talking to you, Andre.
You too, Leroy. Have a great night.
Thanks so much.
Okay.